back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
One day there'll be no dog racing, there'll be windsurfer racing. Rod, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. But windsurfing is something I wouldn't be able to do, I'd say.
What, are you more of a waveboarder?
No, I'm a cyclist. I need firm land.
Not a unicyclist, I hope.
No, that requires...
So we get rid of them, the better. Rod, your specialty is business, and there's a bit of business going on, isn't there? Let's focus on that. We've been focusing on ineptitudes and blunders for so many weeks now, and various successes here and there, and various wins. Simon Bridges, he's still the leader of the National Party. There you go, who would have thought? And the Prime Minister's shot off again. Now, where's she gone this time?
She's gone to Singapore for a meeting of ASEAN, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, and then she's going on to Papua New Guinea for a meeting of APEC, the Asia Pacific.
Is that where APEC is this year? I just heard it's at Papua New Guinea, isn't it? Yeah, oh, well, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, no, they've spent a lot of money. The thing I'm most unhappy about that is they bought, I think it was 60 Maserati sedans to drive dignitaries around in. Sorry, I digress.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah.
How do they? That's Maserati taking an opportunity that wouldn't normally pop up, isn't it?
Yes.
I can't imagine there's a lot of Maserati sales in Papua New Guinea. And I'm not discounting Papua New Guinea. I'm just saying it's a pretty rugged country is what I'm saying, you know, and that seems to be the way they like it.
Yes, it's a really important point that countries like that should have a chance to host big international events, although they are very costly.
Yeah.
And it's very, very doubtful that many of the facilities built for them for the events, which only last a few days, actually have much purpose afterwards.
I can't see anyone taking home their Maseratis.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, that's a bit of a shame, isn't it? Because that's smells a little corruption-y, doesn't it? Sort of at the tail end of what's supposed to be a very positive thing. What will the Prime Minister be talking about at these get-togethers?
Both of them are very important because this is a chance for her to have longer, more detailed conversations about our region with leaders. But in some ways, the most interesting meeting she's having is with in Singapore, is with Vice President Pence of the United States. And very interestingly, the U.S. had asked for that meeting with her. And so that's her first opportunity to have any kind of face-to-face substantive engagement with the Trump administration, albeit not Trump, probably helpfully not Trump.
Yeah.
So it'll be a chance for her. It'll be very interesting to see how she describes the meeting afterwards. I hope to make some cogent and salient points about our relationship with the US, but particularly give them New Zealand's view on some of the things that the Trump administration's up to.
They've obviously very, very knowingly paired her up with Vice President Pence, as opposed to Donald Trump, haven't they? And is that an unusual thing? That's something to be noted, definitely, isn't it?
It is. I'm slightly surprised because the US has got a huge amount of hand-holding, fence-mending, and the rest to do around the world, and particularly in Asia. So it is worth noting, and that's why much of my focus will be trying to work out quite what's gone on there.
Who do you know who sits on the other side of it?
Sits on the other side of...
If she's got Vice President Pence on one side,
yep,
at the big table, who's on the other side? Someone more? It's not going to be old Canada, is it? What's his name? Justin Trudeau's not going to come in there and smooth it up.
These are bilateral meetings.
All right, okay. So these are proper meetings, and this isn't just a sort of a potluck dinner.
No. And
some business.
Trump is being criticised for not going to either of these meetings. Pence is deputising for him both.
What's the reason they've given for that?
I haven't seen one. Maybe he's a bit tired after his trip to Europe over the weekend. I don't know. But very interestingly about that trip to Europe.
Didn't he call Papua New Guinea a shit country once?
Well, he's called a lot of countries that. I'm not
sure. Remember that time when he called a whole bunch of countries that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, oh, dear. But, oh, dear, Rod.
In Europe, over the weekend, all the reports are suggesting from people close to him, he felt terribly cut off and detached from what was going on back in the States, and he watched countless hours of American television and all the rest trying to keep up with politics and election. And it's really,
and let's be blunt, he made a right dick of himself at the armistice commemorations as well.
Yes, yeah. The body language, I mean, not going to honour American war dead because of the rain was one problem, but just his whole body language amongst the other leaders. He was very, very isolated and looked incredibly uncomfortable, indeed.
And little old Macron got a bit of a whittunk in there, didn't he?
Yeah, I'm sure he probably felt good about that.
So the our Prime Minister's over there doing that. Winston Peters in charge and while she's away, is that right? Was he back there?
Well, actually, that's a really good point. I don't know the answer. There could be a very good case for him being there too as Foreign Minister.
Yeah.
In which case, well, the
joystick goes over to Grant Robertson. Calvin Davis, of course.
To Calvin Davis.
Calvin Davis is what I meant to say all the time then.
Yes, yeah.
Oftentimes I forget that, though. But the the running of the country, that's going to be taken. It's a quiet time of the year as far as Parliament goes, though, isn't it?
Oh,
is it getting towards a quiet time of the year?
Parliament is in recess at the moment, so it is pretty quiet. Look, the other thing I'd just love to jump into, if I may, is Brexit, because it's
Please do, Rod, because I'm all confused now. I'm sort of a little bit bored of hearing about it. And make a decision, you know. You know, how hard would it be just for everyone to go, okay, just forget it. We'll forget it. Forget it.
Well, it's really very intriguing what's going on in the UK, because after apparently not much happening and not much negotiation and all being very fraught, there is this 400-page document which has landed, and just looking at the up-to-date news, Theresa May is still in a very long cabinet meeting with her colleagues, trying to persuade the Brexiteers that this is actually a good deal. And the outlines of the deal, which have now been published, practical, constructive, and very interestingly, and this might give the Eurosceptics and the Brexit tears some pause, is both the Daily Mail and Daily Express, you know, two arch nationalist newspapers in the UK, have come out in support of it, saying, give this deal a chance. But the politics internally are really fraught. And Boris Johnson's already said that this agreement would make the UK a vassal state of Europe, which, of course, isn't true. But this is not yet done and dusted, anyways.
In a year of completely unpredictable politics, make a prediction for us, Rod.
Whether this will go through?
Yeah, but what's going to happen with Brexit in the next couple of weeks?
I honestly don't know, because it's very complicated and it's very hard from over here. I mean, it's hard even there, to keep up with the flow of these things. But my view of just looking through the outline of the report is that Britain does get to exit, and in an unorderly fashion. And the mechanisms for that seem quite reasonable. So I think this actually has a chance. Questions like what to do with Northern Ireland, so there is not a border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. That's been, they've found a solution to that. And the financial penalties for leaving are not enormous. The highest estimate is about €75 billion. That's about $125 billion New Zealand dollars over the years.
Yeah.
The one point I found completely fascinating is that Britain has to keep paying into various financial commitments, not the least of which for the pensions of EU civil servants, out to 2064.
Is the confidence that those people who are pro-Brexit, the confidence they have, is that because there's so much money in the United Kingdom it's so much like, I guess, established old money that they're not sort of, they're not worried about suddenly becoming a broken state or anything like that? Is it?
I don't think the economic impact or understanding what's going to happen economically even enters their minds. For many people, this is a deeply visceral thing about the Continentals versus, you know, Albion.
Smells a little racist to me.
Yeah, and so they haven't thought that through. This will be very damaging eventually to the UK economy because eventually the single market will go. There is a transition period there, and it runs until the end of 2020, but that can be extended. But in due course, the UK is going to have to negotiate a trade agreement with Europe, and it won't be anywhere near as beneficial as the single market is now. And that is going to have a big impact on the UK, not just in the financial services, but the car industry, for example, is almost entirely foreign investment and very dependent on supply of parts, but also customers across a single market. And already those car companies are sort of saying, probably not going to be investing much more in the UK.
Yeah, crazy. Hey, Rod, always a pleasure. Nice to talk to you. Have a wonderful day, and we'll speak to you again in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, thanks, Mikey.
Wonderful. Bye-bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.